The entire Courtney family were gathered in the refectory, the central room in the main block of Fort Auspice, where they spent much of their leisure time. It had taken Sarah 4 years to furnish it to its present state of homely comfort. The floor and all the furniture had been lovingly made by the carpenters from indigenous timber, stinkwood, tambuti, and blackwood, magnificently grained and polished with beeswax to a warm lustre. The women had embroidered the cushions and stuffed them with wild kapok. The floors were covered with tanned animal skins. The walls were decorated with framed paintings, most of which had been executed by Sarah and Louisa, although Verity, during her short stay at the fort, had made a substantial contribution to the gallery. Sarah's harpsichord had pride of place against the main wall, and now that Dorian and Mansur were back, the family choir was at full strength once again. This evening there was no singing. They were concerned with far more dire affairs. They sat in intent silence and listened to Verity translate into English the long, detailed report that Tazos had brought them from Bin Shibam in the north. Only one member of the family was less than enthralled by this recital. George Courtney was now almost three, highly mobile and articulate, harbouring no doubts about his needs and desires and unafraid to make them known. He circled the table with his chubby buttocks showing under the vest that was his only garment. In front, his uncircumcised penis waggled like a small white worm. George was accustomed to having the full attention of all, from the lowliest black servant to that godlike being, Grandpa Tom.
"Rapity!"
he tugged imperiously at Verity's skirts. He was still having difficulty with the pronunciation of her name.
"Talk to me, too!"
Verity faltered. George was not easily appeased. She broke off the recital of lists of men, ships, and cannon and looked down at him. He had his mother's golden hair and his father's green eyes. He looked so angelic that he squeezed her heart and awakened in her instincts so deep-seated that she had only recently become aware of them.
"I will tell you a story afterwards," she offered.
"No! Now!"
said George.
"Don't be a pest," said Jim.
"Georgie, baby, come to Mama," said Louisa.
Georgie ignored both his parents.
"Now, Whippity, now," he said again,
his voice rising. Sarah reached into the pocket of her apron and brought out a piece of shortbread. She showed it to him under the table. For the moment, George lost all interest in Verity, dropped onto all fours, and shot among their feet to snatch the bribe out of his grandmother's hand.
"You have a wonderful way with children, Sarah Courtney," Tom grinned at her. "Just spoil 'em rotten, ain't that so?"
"I learned the art from dealing with you," she answered tartly, "for you are the greatest baby of all."
"Will you two stop squabbling for a moment? You're worse than Georgie by far," Dorian told them. "There's an empire at stake and all our lives at risk while you are playing at being doting grandparents."
Verity raised her voice and took up from where she had been interrupted, and they all became serious again. At last she read out Bin Shibam's final salutation to his caliph. "Majesty, may God grant you victory and glory. I shall wait with all the tribes to welcome you when you return to us." Tom broke the silence at last.
"Can we trust his fellow? How did he find out so much?"
"Yes, brother, we can trust him," Dorian replied. "I do not know how he has come by this news. I only know that if Bin Shibam says it is so, then it must be true."
"In that case, we cannot remain here to be attacked by an overwhelming fleet of war dhows crammed with battle-hardened Omani troops. We'll have to move on."
"Do not even think it, Tom Courtney," said Sarah.
"I have spent my whole married life on the move. This is my home, and this creature Zayn al-Din will not drive me out of it. I am staying here."
"Woman, will you not listen to reason for once in your life?"
"I hate to take sides in such a domestic furore."
Dorian took his pipe out of his mouth and smiled at them fondly. "But Sarah is right. We will never be able to run far enough to escape the wrath of Zayn and the men with him. Their enmity will encompass oceans and continents." Tom frowned darkly and tugged at one large ear. Then he sighed.
Maybe you're right, Dorry. The hatred they bear this family goes back too far. Sooner or later we must stand and face them."
"'We will never have such an opportunity presented to us again,' Dorian went on. "'Bin Shibam has given us Zayn al-Din's complete battle plan. "'Zayn will come to fight us on our own ground. "'When he disembarks his army, it will be at the end of a voyage of 2,000 leagues. "'He will have only those of his horses that have survived the rigours of the journey. "'We, on the other hand, will be prepared. "'Our men rested, armed and well-mounted.' "'Dorian laid his hand on his brother's shoulder. "'Believe me, Tom, this is our best chance "'and probably the only one we will get.' "'You think like a warrior,' Tom conceded, "'while I think like a merchant. "'I relinquish command to you. "'The rest of us, Jim and Louisa, Mansur and Verity, "'will follow your orders. "'I would like to say the same for my dear wife, "'but following orders has never been one of her strengths.' "'Very well, Tom, I accept the task.' "'We have but a little time to lay our plans,' Dorian said, "'and will need to take advantage of every minute of it. "'My first concern will be to survey the field, "'to pick out those areas where we are strongest "'and avoid those where we are weakest.' "'Tom nodded approval. "'He liked the way Dorian had so swiftly taken the reins. "'Go on, brother. "'We are all listening.' "'Dorian spoke through puffs of tobacco smoke. "'We know from Bin Shibam that when Zayn brings his ships into the lagoon and bombards the fort, it will be a diversion. The main force under Kurtz's command will land on the coast and march overland to surround us and prevent us breaking out to retreat inland. What we have to do first is find the most likely spot for Kurtz to land, then survey the route he will be forced to take to reach the fort.' The next day, Dorian and Tom went on board the Revenge and sailed in a northerly direction along the coast. They stood together at the chart table, studying the coastline as it passed, refreshing their memories as to all the salient features. Kurtz must try to land as close to the fort as possible. Every mile he is forced to march will compound his difficulties 10 times over, Dorian muttered. This was a dangerous, treacherous coast. The steeply shelving beaches and rocky headlands were exposed to a high surf and open to sudden gales. Nativity was almost the only secure harbour within 100 miles. The one other possible landing was at the mouth of a large river which ran into the sea only a few miles north of the entrance to Nativity Bay. The local tribes called this river Omgeni. Large war dhows would not be able to negotiate the shallow bar at the entrance, but smaller boats could do so with ease. "'That is where Kurtz will land,' Dorian told Tom with finality. "'In his longboats, he could send 500 men up the river in a few hours.' Tom nodded. "'However, once he's got them ashore, they would still face a march of many miles through rugged country to reach the fort.' "'We had best find out just how rugged it really is,' Dorian said, and he put the Revenge about, and they sailed back southwards, keeping as close inshore as the wind and tide would allow. They stood at the starboard rail and studied the shore through their telescopes. There was a continuous sweep of beach all the way, sugary brown sands pounded by an unremitting surf. If they stuck to the beach, carrying their own armour, weapons and supplies, they would make heavy weather of marching through that deep sand, Tom opined. What is more, they would be vulnerable for the whole march to the cannonade of our ships. Added to which is that if he's trying to surprise us, Kurtz would never send them along the open beach. He knows we would spot such a large force at once. He must detour inland, Dorian decided. Tell me, brother, the bush above the beach seems impenetrable. Is it really so? It is very thick, but not impenetrable, Tom told him. Also, there are marshy and swampy areas. The bush is infested with buffalo and rhino, and the swamps are filled with crocodile. However, there are game paths along a ridge of slightly higher ground that runs parallel to the shore, about 2 cables' length inland from the beach. It remains dry and firm at all seasons and states of the tide. "'Then we must go over the ground carefully and mark that path,' Dorian said, and they sailed back into the bay. The following morning, accompanied by Jim and Mansur, they rowed along the beach until they reached the mouth of the Umgeni River. "'That was easy going,' Mansur checked his pocket watch. "'We covered the ground in less than 3 hours.' "'That may be so, but the enemy will be marching on foot, not mounted,' Jim pointed out. and we will have them in easy grapeshot range from the ships.
Yes, Dorian acknowledged. Tom and I have already agreed that they must move inland.
We want to scout that route now.
They followed the south bank of the Umgeni River upstream for a mile or so until it entered the hills and the banks became steep and high, making the going difficult even for their small party.
No, they will not come this far inland. They'll be trying to invest the fort with all speed they can. They must cut through the littoral swamps, Dorian decided.
They returned downstream, and Jim pointed out the beginning of the low causeway through the swamps. The trees along it were taller than the surrounding forest. They left the river and headed towards it. Almost immediately, the horses plunged into the black mud of the mangrove swamps. They were forced to dismount and lead them through until they reached the ridge of firmer ground. Even here there were potholes of treacherous mud hidden under an innocuous-seeming scum of green slime. The bush grew so densely that the horses were unable to force their way through. The twisted stems of ancient milkwood trees formed serried ranks like armoured warriors, and their branches hung down and entwined with the Amatimagula shrub, whose long, sturdy thorns could pierce the leather of their boots and inflict deep, painful wounds. They were forced to move along the same paths that crisscrossed this jungle, which were nothing more than narrow tunnels of vegetation forged by buffalo and rhinoceros. The thorny roofs were so low that again they were forced to dismount and lead the horses. Even then they had to stoop, and the thorns rasped on their empty saddles, scoring the leather. The mosquitoes and biting midges rose in black clouds from the mud holes and swarmed around their sweating faces, crawling into their ears and nostrils. When Cadam and Coots drew up their battle plan, neither of them had tried to march through this. Tom lifted his hat and mopped his face and shiny pate.
"We can make him pay for every yard in heavy coin," Jim said.
Until now he had been silent since they left the beach. "In here it'll be all close work, hand to hand. Bows and spears will have the advantage over muskets and cannon."
"Bows and spears?" Dorian demanded with sudden interest. "Who will wield them?"
"My good friend and brother in blood and war, King Beshwayo and his bloodthirsty savages," said Jim proudly.
"Tell me about him," Dorian ordered.
"Oh, it's a long story, Uncle. It'll have to wait until we get back to the fort. That is, if we can ever find our way home through this hellish tangle."